Hey, everybody. Welcome to another episode of the Dream Big Podcast with Bob Goff and friends. I'm Scott Schimmel. I'm here with Bob.
Hey, everybody. I hope you're hanging in there. It's been a great week. I know it has been for us, and I think you're really in for a treat today.
We are in this interesting time. That's something that everybody talks about. We talk about this on the podcast every week from so many different angles. I was talking to a friend the other day, and he's a smart, wise, loving guy. But he was mentioning somebody that he knows that has a different opposing viewpoint to him. And he made this comment. It stuck out to me. He said, I'm just not even going to talk to that guy ever again, if that's what he thinks. And it's such a bizarre time in our history where if someone holds a different viewpoint from yours, it can feel like they're enemies. And I just don't think that's going well for any of us. I don't know about you.
Yeah, we can make some pretty stupid rules up to govern our relationships. And so some of those words, never, ever, ever again, yeah. I will never. And what we're trying to do is understand what's going on around us. And so what we do is we build these shelves to put people and ideas on. And I think what we need to do is make some new shelves and to say, this is one I don't understand right now. But I'm going to circle back to it and give a little grace.
And there's a seed or a spark of an idea that when people are different than you or hold an opposing viewpoint of yours, what if you can learn from them? What does it look like to draw near to them? And this week, we're thrilled to have Jeremy Courtney on the podcast. We actually had this, you had this conversation with him months ago, well before the pandemic, well before racial injustice, but how timely to have a guy who understands what it looks like to draw near to folks when they're different from him and learn how to bring love and also to be transformed as he moves towards them. So tell us about how you know Jeremy.
Yeah, Jeremy and I are friends from Iraq. We started doing things back there. He's been there for ages, touching lives and doing just heroic, courageous things in there and Syria and beyond. But Jeremy's message is really a timeless one. He's a guy who's got his eyes fixed on Jesus, but he's got his feet planted in the needs of others. And I think that it informs us, no matter what the circumstance, what the issue of the day is. I think we learn a lot from Jeremy. I know I have for years and years. We've spoken at places in different countries together, at conferences, and we've been together in Iraq. And at a time, I think we were together when ISIS had kind of encircled Erbil, and it just felt like a little bit of a tense time, but he's a cool cucumber. He's a courageous guy.
Well, you're going to enjoy listening into a conversation between Bob Goff and Jeremy Courtney.
Jeremy, I'm so glad to have you on the podcast. Thanks a million for making time for us. It's just good to see you again.
Glad we can make it work. Thanks.
Last time we were sitting together, I think it may have been in another county. It was probably Australia. But before that, I remember sitting upstairs in a room. The Peshmerga military just surrounded Mosul. We were wondering how that would all shake out. But the one thing that's been consistent about you is that your love for people and your engagement in their life. And you've done that overseas, but somehow you've also brought along an entire couple generations of Earth with you. And I know your influence in people's lives has been so tremendous. For people that haven't met you before, tell us a little bit about you and how you got involved in the work you're doing.
Yeah, about me. Well, I live in Iraq with my wife and two kids. We've been there for 12 going on 13 years. We've been overseas almost 16 years, kind of motivated by the aftermath of September 11th and those attacks, which were so formative in my young life. And just trying to figure out how we respond to really all the fear that was kind of coalescing around the United States, around the church that I was a part of, around my own identity and insecurity at that time as a young man trying to start a family. So that helped launch us out into the world, so to speak. So we've been living overseas in predominantly Muslim countries for 16 years or so. And a lot of that's been spent in Iraq and Syria at war and trying to figure out how we can love our neighbors.
Yeah. And so the beautiful thing about loving your neighbors, you can go across an ocean or you can go across the street. We're surrounded by them. They deliver our mail. They encourage us. They creep us out. We have, you know, if your neighborhood looks like my neighborhood, there's people, the geography might look different. The topography might be different. The architecture might be different. But the people have a lot in same. They're just as insecure as I am. They have the love for their families that I have for mine. They have whatever faith tradition they're trying to express and adhere to. They're doing this. So tell us about this whole idea of dreaming big for the world around you and some of the things that as people are listening, that they would understand a little bit more about what your experience has been, but then the overarching idea of dreaming big for this world.
Well, I think early on, coming out of 9/11 and then moving out into the world, kind of out of the parochial, very local thing that we had always known, we had dreams for the world, but those dreams mostly boiled down to, I wouldn't have said this at the time, I wouldn't have even really been aware or known it at the time, but I think the big dream for the world back then was that more and more people would become more and more like me. That was essentially the big dream. And so we went out with a particular kind of, I went out with a particular kind of missionary posture, zeal, that was largely about conforming people to my way of seeing the world. And what has changed over the years is that I've come to understand that there's a lot I don't know. And I've been changed in the process of being out of my neighborhood and being in the neighborhoods of other people. And so now the big dream, over the course of this, you know, 15, 16 year journey, as it's changed us, now as an organization, Preemptive Love, we talk about what we can do to end war. That's what we exist to do, to end war. Because we've lived through a number of wars, we've placed our lives on the front lines of others, and we've seen enough. One of the things we've seen is that men and women are the ones who go to war. Men and women are the ones who commit war, and we think there's probably a way that we can stop. And so we spend all of our time and all of our lives trying to figure out how we can end war. And not just the big bombs and the bullets kind of stuff, but really the things that precede that, the way we think about each other, the way we talk about each other, the way we divide and sort ourselves out from one another. So that's the big dream. How can we heal all that's tearing us apart and war?
And then, so help me drill down on that, because I'm picturing someone's listening to the podcast. They're stuck in traffic. They're just trying to get home. Another person's jogging. And the idea is like, there's this guy from Iraq that's saying, let's end war. Be like, buddy, I'm just trying to make it through the day. How could we do both? Give me some practical things for us to do. Come on.
Yeah. I mean, for one thing, we've had people who have talked like this for a long time, but one of the things that has never existed in our world is the level of connectivity that we have today. And that is both a blessing and a curse. We actually have the ability to organize, to know information, to be informed, and to feel empathy for people on a level that we have never experienced in the history of the planet. So one of the things that we're trying to do is leverage the best of that connectivity, leverage the best of those online tools to actually drive and create offline community, real world connections with one another. I think one of the things that we've seen in our world over the last few years is that the way we talk about each other in one neighborhood will lead to, for example, the alienation of those people, the fear growing in another group of people, which will impact how we vote, which will impact what we preach, which will impact how policies get played out. And depending on how we fear each other or how we feel empathy and connection to one another, our elected officials go on to enact the very things that we're telling them to enact. And I do not think it's too small a thing to say that the way we talk about refugees or immigrants or people of color or people from a different religion, the way we talk about that in small town California or big town New York City or whatever, it actually ultimately affects who gets a bomb dropped in their yard somewhere on the other side of the world, or who gets a dragnet dropped on them and ends up being arrested and held without due process at some part of the world. These things are very connected. So I think to bring it down to our jogging friends right now, to bring it down to our friends sitting in traffic right now, how well we know our neighbors and what those neighbors that we bring to our table look like have a profound impact on how we think about fighting with one another, how we think about allocation of resources, how we run local governments. And so a lot of our work at the very practical level is dispelling myths and creating community and contact with one another so that we know Muslims if you're not a Muslim, or you know Christians if you're not a Christian, or you know people of color if you're something different than that.
Yeah, and so it this idea of participation that it's for those in our faith community that look to Scripture, James 1:22, don't just like hear these things and agree, but to do what it says. And so for each of us to just do what it says means to love people. You've thought of this idea that's just been so pivotal to me, like love anyways. Tell me about the origins of that. I know it's a book. I've seen a movie. It's like, it's so fun. It's a really simple concept that I can get my arms around, yet it's a simply impossible concept to love. It's easy to love people like you because you're like low-hanging fruit to me. You're just a nice guy. So I don't know a lot of people that wouldn't love you. I will let you know if I meet somebody that doesn't think you're terrific. But how do you love somebody who's actually really difficult? How do you get to that love anyways? Tell me some stuff you're learning about that.
Yeah, I think it's a phrase or philosophy that we sort of seized upon because we needed something for what some people call the second half of life, so to speak. In the first half of life, we shot out of the cannon, shot out of the gate with this youthful zeal that we could change the world. And I think you and I both speak at a lot of conferences and hang around people who are full of that energy. But what I think we've both probably seen happen is that somewhere along the way, within 3 or 4 years out of college or 5 to 10 years into your career, like the zeal starts waning, you know, it starts dying down and you start having to reckon with the pain of the world. Someone in your family gets cancer, the job doesn't turn out the way you think it's going to, a child dies. And like Mike Tyson says, everyone has a plan when they get into the ring until they get punched in the face. And I think that a lot of us get punched in the face shooting out of the cannon with all this love that we want to bring the world, and we don't yet really know how to reckon with the pain and the complexity of it all. And in my life, I've seen a number of well-meaning friends sort of burn out and land on the shores of all their own good intentions, not able to really see it through into the second half of life once all the pain and complexity is now fully rested on their family. So when Jess and I landed in Iraq, one of the first serious, heavy conversations that we had was with a bunch of soldiers, and they shared this philosophy. I said, how do you guys do it? How do you patrol the streets and maintain safety and all this stuff, knowing that a suicide bomber could go up and, you know, blow you up at any moment? This was an American soldier who said this to me, but I would say that the philosophy of what they shared was true of Kurds, Arabs, Sunni, Shia, Muslims, Christians. It was true across the board. The general fear and feeling where they said, shoot first, ask questions later. And we sort of, it seemed to be apropos of the way that a lot of us think and feel. Fear first, maybe, ask questions later. Maybe we don't actually take aim and shoot, but that's our natural default. And Jess and I just left that conversation thinking, there's got to be something more. There's got to be a better way than shoot first, ask questions later. What if we love first, ask questions later? And that became sort of the fuel for the first half of our organization. The first half of our life was about, let's just love everybody and let God sort it out. But it didn't get us to where we wanted to go because we got punched in the face. We got betrayed. Bombs fell. our friends were kidnapped, our friends were killed. ISIS rises up, slaughters and commits genocide all over our places that we love and our people that we love. And in the middle of that, I really just wanted to throw up my hands and quit. And a friend suggested, are you really going to walk away from everything that you've invested your life in? Are you going to let the pain take over and just not love anymore? Or are you going to press into the pain and figure out how to love anyway? And that became a new way of seeing the world, sort of the anywayness of love, that both the pain and the promise could live integrated side by side.
And we're all figuring this stuff out as we go. And so sometimes a person might be listening and saying, well, yeah, that's great for you because you're the Iraq guy and you moved your family. So I just can't relate to that. But think about your own family and what you would do for your family. And if God's view of the world is that we are a family and every family has a couple nutty uncles and a lawyer or two in it, the people that are trying to tell you what to do and the people that are just amusing, and then the really difficult people. I just, by this message of loving people anyway, start it right where you are. But do it in your community. But you don't have to stop there. It isn't binary. You don't have to say, well, I'm just going to do it here on Elm Street in the United States. Instead, what I'm going to do is a little bit here, a little bit there, because I want to expand my worldview. And I think for you, you've had a very expansive worldview and you've lived that out. I just want to encourage the people that are living organizations like Preemptive Love that are doing things over perhaps with your family to just put a pin in a map and to say, there's a country on the other side of the world. And I want you to know a little bit about the country through people that are actually living in the country. What kinds of things could you recommend to people just in their families so they would have a broader worldview? What are kind of first steps? Because I think people want to engage this and they're looking for practical steps for how.
Yeah, I think, first of all, it's true that some people think of me as the Iraq guy or the Syria guy or you as the Uganda guy or whatever, but it's not necessarily how I see myself. I moved into a neighborhood, and from that point forward, it just became my neighborhood. So in some ways, I see myself more as the neighborhood guy, and I think we could all come to see ourselves more as the neighborhood family that loves where we are well. It just so happens that my neighborhood has been in the news recently. My neighborhood has been in some trouble, and my neighborhood is the product of some foreign meddling, but it's still my people and my neighborhood, and I think that's the bigger message here is what can we do right where we live to heal all that's tearing us apart. Now, if you are looking for ways to expand your worldview, whether it's at a neighborhood level, because there's a lot of things going on in many of our neighborhoods that we don't know anything about. It's not just our culture or our people whose viewpoint we've always shared. In many cases, we're sort of demarcated by the railroad tracks or the highway lines, or, I mean, there are things that divide us even within our own zip codes. And it can take some real intentionality. Maybe following an Instagram account or a sort of niche publication newspaper that caters to one community but not necessarily the other. There are niche Muslim newsletters and newspapers probably in your zip code, or there are niche publications that may cater to the Black community but not so much the white community in your zip code. Learning to listen to other voices that are local to you, but still somehow foreign or different from yours, has been a really important part of how I've come to expand. We've come to expand our worldview.
Isn't that beautiful how it is possible right where you are? If there's a mosque nearby, there's an imam nearby. And so go for pancakes. Like, that's what I did. The local guy we meet at IHOP every time and pound waffles and just talk about life and what you're learning. And is there any way it could be helpful? Is there something that I could be more heads up to that I haven't been in my own community. And then the crazy part is, as you take a genuine interest in what's going on in other people's lives, the crazy part is you have a more heightened awareness of what's going on in your life and in your family. And it's, so it's that reverse economy that Jesus was always talking about. Yeah. You want to make your family rock? Go get involved in somebody else's family and just say, what are the challenges that you're up against? And it'll expand your worldview, which will actually expand this world for your family that you want. Tell us some resources that people could take advantage of. They want to find out more about you. They want to find out more about Preemptive Love. And people, no better organization than to jump behind Preemptive Love and all they're doing. And I've been around the sun a couple times, and I've seen not just what you've done, Jeremy, but I know the character of the man that you are. So tell us some resources that are out there for people listening.
Well, thanks. We've worked really hard over the last few years to develop tools and resources because we were finding that some of these conversations and some of the ideas were too esoteric. We needed to put it more at the resource level for our friends. So we're starting to host more and more of those at loveanyway.com. We made a film over the last couple of years that surveying our work over the last decade or so. And without revealing too much of the ending of it all, it starts in bite-sized chunks that many of us will find more palatable and easy to digest because it situates our conflict on the other side of the world. And that's how a lot of us relate to conflict. But as you go through the film and as you get what feels like the film's coming to an end, the film sort of turns the table and the perspective a little bit and says, maybe this isn't just their problem over there on the other side of the world. Maybe this is something common to all of us. Maybe I've got some stuff going on in my own heart and neighborhood that need to change as well. So we made this film specifically as a tool so that for those of us who have been, you know, fairly privileged to not have our bodies shot at and penalized for what we look like and for who we are, it can be hard for us to know how to talk about racism, for example, while other people can never escape it. For those of us who don't look what you might consider quote-unquote visibly Muslim, we can get a pass in the grocery store while some of our friends are constantly under suspicion and feel like everywhere they go they are threatening others. So we made this tool for those of us who kind of get a pass so that we can help host better conversations. Gather some friends in a living room, do a screening at your church or your corporation, 30-minute film, easy peasy, and it will start a conversation that you might find difficult starting without someone else doing the starting for you. So let us do that starting of the conversation for you, and it easily gives rise to some important conversations that we need to be having in the United States and around the world. Who do we trust? Who do we distrust? How do we know what we know? And how are we going to heal all that's tearing us apart?
So good. And then a book.
Yeah.
Tell us about that.
Also at loveanyway.com, there's a little tab over there that has other resources, a book that I've written recently about kind of our journey and these ideas that I wrote with a strict focus of trying to be a guidebook for others who are coming of age, kind of working through this first half of life naivete, love first, ask questions later, what could go wrong, but then maybe feeling like all your hopes and dreams have been dashed on the rocks, and then how do you get back in the game? How do you find the energy and the captivating vision to get back into it and just love anyway, come what may? So the book is available at Amazon and wherever books are sold. The book is called Love Anyway. We've got a podcast that releases weekly that delves into these conversations more deeply. The podcast is called Love Anyway. We try to keep everything really simple.
I think it's working. So good. Love is sacrificing commitment. If anybody tells you love is something else, they're just wrong. And so thank you for loving people. Know what it's like to sacrifice, because I've seen you do that. I know you don't see that as sacrificial. You just see it as Tuesday, but it's sacrificial to wake up in a different hotel room every day. And then when you're not, to be apart from your family, there's times that you're required to be in its commitment. And thank you for just refocusing us on things that are beautiful. And I know that heaven is leaning over the rails, just
you know, just gleaming about what's happening. But for you, those who are listening, this isn't for somebody else. This is for us, and we get to participate. We don't get to just watch. We're not the observers. We're actually on the field. And so find your place in your community, preemptive love, find a place to connect. Jeremy, thank you so much for making the time.
Thanks, brother.
All right.
The most frequent questions we hear at Dream Big are actually really simple. The questions are this: how do I do it? How do I focus on my ambitions and bring them to life? How do I reorganize everything and move towards these dreams that are inside me? That's what Dream Big is all about. And we want to give you an actionable resource that you can use so that you can move from your ideas and your ambitions to reality. So go to the link in the show notes, download a really simple workbook that you can use today.
Well, I think, Bob, what sticks out to me the most from Jeremy's style, the way he thinks, and of course, the way he lives and the way he's chosen for his family to live, is when people are different from you, don't move away from them, move towards them. And I guess my question for you, when you know someone is pretty, let's say, prickly, or they've got a very strong opinion about things or a strong stance towards things, and you're not sure yet, or you maybe held a different opinion, how do you, what's the best way to get near them without making their prickles get even sharper?
Yeah, what a great question. I just assume that they're just as insecure as I am.
That helps.
And I just deal with my insecurity by being fun trying to kind of read the room and ease some of the tension. Other people don't read the room the same way. And they think that they need to add some intensity to the room. And you know what? Whatever blows your hair back, but it isn't just you. It's to say, what's the kindest thing I could do for somebody else? And sometimes it's just letting somebody speak their mind and to understand that this isn't a personal attack. Everything isn't directed at you just because they have a different viewpoint. You don't need to defend yourself, but to just delight in understanding that they're different.
I wonder if, as you're listening, if somebody comes to mind in your world, maybe it's a friend of yours you haven't seen in a while, but you see them on Facebook and you know that they're hot and bothered about something, or maybe it's a family member. I guess this week, maybe the challenge for me and for you would be to not move away from them or silence their feed or just avoid seeing them or talking to them. What does it look like to move towards them and give them the opportunity to share what's on their heart and mind?
Yeah, you just don't need to give them a lot of real estate in your life. What you can do is to be fully present with them. But every fight is not yours to fight. But this idea is every person is yours to love. And so to sort that out, I can love the person. And this doesn't need to be my fight, but it's definitely one to understand and to appreciate, be curious about their passion, where that came from, and how they ended up being so passionate about that. So be a student of the people that are the difficult ones. And the crazy thing is, I can be a difficult guy. I'm like a fun guy, but I've got a difficult side to me. You know, Scott, because you've been around me for a while. And I think what you've done is you've just loved me through it. We don't try to resolve it all. You've just said, like, oh, wow, I wonder if Bob's having an off day. You're giving people a little bit of grace.
And some people have an off year, an off decade, and that's okay. Well, we are wrapping up. Next week is our last episode of season two of the Dream Big podcast. So we are thrilled that you've been along for the ride, and we look forward to one final conversation between Bob and I. So tune in next week and go move towards that person that is difficult for you to love.